members are present. We'll open the work session on House Bill 3120B, and we do have a panel of some testimony this morning that I think we should hear, and I'd ask Diana Godwin to come forward, please. Panel, this is in reference to Section 14 of the bill. Good morning, Mrs. Godwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Diana Godwin. I'm an attorney in private practice. I'm appearing here today in my private capacity as an attorney who has practiced administrative law for a number of years. I represent in my practice a number of licensed professionals who have come before licensing boards for disciplinary proceedings. They range from pharmacists to plumbers to employers before the Bureau of Labor, physical therapists, nurses, etc. And I can tell you today that every licensing board, particularly the professional medical licensing boards, have extensive administrative rules that detail every type of offense that could cause a licensee to have their license suspended, have a fine imposed on them, have probation against them, a full panoply of disciplinary options available to a licensing board. For instance, for a medical licensing board, most of the charges would be things like addiction to either prescription or non-prescription drugs, abuse of alcohol, sexual impropriety with patients, fraudulent billing, a pattern of incompetent practice, failure to adequately document medical care. In other words, they don't follow the documentation rules. They haven't trained their nurses properly. They use support personnel improperly. It's a full range, and it's very, very detailed. If you look at the administrative rules for most of these licensing boards, under the list of items for which a person can be disciplined, they will run to pages and pages of small print, and that's fine. That puts a licensee on real notice about the real specific conduct they engage in that could cause them to put their license in jeopardy. Then there is a catch-all for most licensing boards in their statutes. They say they could also discipline for somebody who's of bad character or been convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude. And then the general statute that governs all of those boards and agencies that have such a clause is the existing ORS 670-280, which currently provides that a licensing board, commission, or agency may deny, suspend, or revoke an occupational or professional license for the reason that the applicant or licensee has been convicted of a crime, but it must consider the relationship of the facts which support the conviction and all intervening circumstances to the specific occupational or professional standards in determining the fitness of the person to receive or hold the license. So if it is not detailed in their administrative rules, they do have this catch-all that if there's a crime that involves character, moral turpitude, they can separately discipline the person. But the statute says it's got to be a conviction and there's got to be a logical nexus. It's got to be related. And that protects a licensee who could lose his or her livelihood. Now, Section 14 of this bill further amends that existing statute to add a new subsection 3 on page 15, lines 7 through 10, which now says, under this new language, that instead of just a conviction, a licensing board, commission, or agency may deny an occupational or professional license or impose discipline, which means also revocation of a license, for conduct that is not undertaken directly in the course of the licensed activity, but that is substantially related to the fitness and ability of the applicant to engage in the activity for which the license is required. We're not talking conviction. We're not even talking being charged. We're talking about conduct, not conduct that may even be illegal. It could be, you know, offensive free speech activity. Out there, you know, marching in the streets, holding a banner saying, I love Saddam Hussein, he's my guy. And the licensee is an architect, a medical professional. The board finds this morally offensive, maybe treasonous, it's conduct. They bring that person up and they say, well, if you have those kinds of views in the future as you treat patients, you know, you could be a little weird. And that may not stick. And possibly won't, but I can tell you dragging a licensee through that kind of proceeding for conduct that is not criminal, that is not a violation of the specific administrative rules, I think gives way too much power to big government, particularly these licensing boards who hold people's livelihoods in their hands. I've seen it happen. I have fought for licensees. I've won acquittals, you know, in hearings. But by that time, the licensee spent $20,000 or $30,000. And sure, it may be overturned on appeal if they do, if the licensing board does revoke their license for something like that. Yeah, they can go to the Court of Appeals and get it overturned. But there's no recompense for them for the money and aggravation and damage to their reputation that occurs. I think you have adequate grounds for every licensing board to seek to discipline people and to give them this just general thing, conduct, that they find is, quote, substantially related to the fitness. And I can tell you that these boards, all of whom are dedicated to protection of the public, I don't mean in any way to malign any board. They do hold that responsibility very seriously to protect the public. But I can tell you that, quote, what is substantially related to the fitness to practice that activity is in the eyes of those beholders on the licensing board. They are generally not lawyers. They generally, I think, in the last 15 years, since there were all the scandals about MDs who practiced inappropriately and kept getting relicensed, that licensing boards, the pendulum has swung the other way to where anything and everything, they will go against the licensee for the protection of the public. And we need a balance. I'm sorry. I think I've carried on. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Mr. Chair,
Senator?
I'm not finding the Christine Shute amendment as being the one that impacts Section 14. Hers impact the others. Who was the originator of the Section 14?
I believe it is the Department of Justice, the AG's office.
It really
sounds like our amendment. Mr. Ruttlinger, can you come up, please?
I believe it is.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, Ted Reutlinger from the Legislative Council's office. The relevant amendments, I believe, that you're discussing are both Sections 14 and Section 15. And I don't know if you've heard the background, but I believe that both of these amendments were the result of judicial opinions that held that various licensing boards could not impose discipline on licensees because the conduct was not substantially related to the real estate activity or whatever activity the person was licensed to engage in. And that's what these two sections are aimed at addressing.
I see the Assistant Attorney General. Maybe we'd have him up here, too.
Wait,
it seems to make sense if we can just get him all up here.
It does, Senator.
We do not object. I don't have any objection to Section 15 because that's a rifle shot that addresses the specific issue for the Board of Appraisers. I'm talking about this general broad brush that I'm advocating for the deletion of Section 14 in my private capacity as an administrative law work.
Okay.
All right.
Chair Girard, members of the committee, Philip Schradl, special counsel to the Attorney General. Rushed over here, so I'm a bit out of breath. This bill was proposed by our office for a couple of reasons. The biggest reason was that we had, in fact, I'm handling a case in the Oregon Supreme Court out of the real estate agency. But it's a bigger issue than just the real estate agency. Oregon Supreme Court in a case called Dearborn versus Real Estate Agency, and then a court of appeals in a subsequent case called Curley versus Real Estate Agency. In those two circumstances, the court concluded that the real estate agency could not look at actions undertaken by a licensee that weren't undertaken directly in the course of the licensed activity. The factual circumstances differentiate a little bit because in Dearborn, the activity was undertaken while the person was a licensee, but not directly related to the license activity at all. In Curley, the matter was even closer because the activity was undertaken just before the person became licensed by the real estate agency, and it was fraudulent misrepresentation in real estate activity that was at issue. And it was during the course of time while he was licensed as a bar advocate, as an attorney, but it occurred just before he applied for his real estate license. The real estate agency commissioner did not know about that activity until it became the subject of bar disciplinary proceeding. Came to light after the person had obtained his license, and the real estate commissioner determined this is directly related to his fitness to practice real estate, because it was fraudulent misrepresentations and I think it was three different real estate investment activities with his law partners. And nevertheless, the Court of Appeals determined that because the way the statute was written, that the real estate agency commissioner could not even consider that in terms of imposing disciplinary sanction, disciplinary sanction on the licensee. So that was, those two cases brought this matter to our attention, that with respect to all licensees, frankly, all licensees, not just real estate practitioners, but all licensees, that the language is too narrow because it only allows the licensing board to consider activity, or at least it's susceptible to the same reading as the court gave it in Dearborn and Curley, that it's only that matters that are directly related or directly engaged in the course of a license activity. That's what these amendments are going at, is simply allowing licensing agencies to consider activity by licensees that's not directly in the course of the licensed activity, but that is substantially related to the fitness and ability of the practitioner to engage in that activity. This is not intended, and I don't believe that it would have the import of allowing witch hunts. It's not intended to be broad. It needs to be substantially related to the fitness to practice the licensed activity. And that's why the language was chosen that's in the amendments right now. I'm not sure if that addresses the questions, because I was running over here and not understanding what...
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you for that explanation, and that is what's contained in the memo from Ms. Shute. And it sounds like Diana's concern is that you're trying to shoot an ant with an elephant gun, that you open up conduct as a rationale for denying a license, and that's too broad. And what you attempted to do was broaden it a bit to include the conduct that you're talking about in the two cases. So that at least is an explanation of where we are. I don't know quite where we go from here, but I mean, I guess I don't have any.
Can I ask a related question?
Representative
Can I ask our counsel, do you have... I was curious about the section, right above section 3, that's a question here. I'm wondering whether that section, sub 2, lines 1 through 5 of page 15. And my curiosity is to whether that's just cleaning up language or whether there's a substantive change in that amendment as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, as I understand it, you're asking about existing law on page 15, lines 1 through 6.
Well, there's amendments to the existing law.
Right. That is intended to be cleanup because we've defined the terms license and licensee, and the form and style of the legislature now is to use the words may not instead of shall not. That's what's happening there on the second
may
line.
Not instead of shall.
Right.
Not as different as shall, right?
Well, we've just restructured the sentence there. But
may not accept, it says later.
Right. Those are basically intended to be cleanup and conforming amendments to existing law.
Chair Girard, if I might interject with respect to Representative Greenlick, your question. In the first line of that, it says, originally said, no licensing board may. And so it's just, no licensing board shall, so it's changing it to a licensing board may not.
I missed the no at the front end.
I perceive no substantive change.
Mr. Chair?
Senator?
So back to Section 3, Ted, is that a fair analysis of what they were trying to do, trying to broaden it so that a commission would have more ability to look at other issues rather than specific job-related issues, that was the intent?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, yes, that was the intent based upon those two judicial opinions. Exactly as Mr. Schradl described it seems to me the crux of the issue is how far would it allow the agency to go. And it is modified by the phrase that the conduct must be substantially related to the fitness, so they would have to make that finding. So there is some limit, but obviously it's a matter of your comfort level with how far that goes.
Mr. Chair, so do you believe then that there are sideboards then, in not only in substantially related, but probably in other statutory sections in terms of what a commission can do, what an agency can do in terms of licensing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I'm not sure I understand your question. Sideboards?
Well, the limitation that is placed in here is substantially related to the fitness and ability of the applicant to engage in the activity. So that's a limitation in and of itself. And it seems like Diana's problem is that she thinks that that's overly broad. It seems to be fairly narrow, though, that there has to be a tie-in between the conduct and the work that the person does.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, yes, before a board, agency, or commission could deny, revoke, impose discipline, they would have to establish that there is some connection between the quote-unquote conduct and a relationship to the fitness and ability of the person to engage in the license activity. They would have to at least allege some connection. People could argue about whether or not the conduct is in fact connected to your fitness, but as a starting point, they would certainly need to establish that there is some connection.
So, Mr. Chair, then just to, I don't want to belabor the point, but I'm trying to either get it on record that we're not opening this up for witch hunts, or that we are. And so would this fix the Dearborn case? Because that was in a plea bargain. He pled guilty to two drug possession charges, and other charges were dismissed as part of the plea bargain. So might one argue that those facts would be enough for the agency to then deny the license?
Chair Girard, Senator Corcoran. In fact, I think it would be extremely questionable. I don't think this language would change the outcome in Dearborn, frankly. In Dearborn, the Supreme Court concluded that the activity at question, while engaged in while the person was licensed, was unrelated to his licensed activity. It was private acts that were not related to his fitness or ability to engage in real estate activity. I think it wouldn't change the outcome in Dearborn. I think it would change the outcome in Curley. And in Curley, again, the activity there was fraudulent misrepresentations in real estate activity, and the real estate commissioner believed that should suffice for why this person has already exhibited the inability to conform with the standards of practice in the real estate, or what should be in the real estate industry. So I think it would change the outcome in Curley. I don't think it would change the outcome in Dearborn. And my own take on it is that substantially related to the fitness to practice through licensed activity is exactly the right cabin to put on it. The import is not to allow a licensing board to go after somebody for activity that's not related to the fitness to practice. It is only what is within the scope of the fitness to practice. That's what we're intending to get at.
So you don't think the Saddam Hussein support group notion that Diana brought up is going to play into this at all? It's a bad analogy.
Chair Girard, Senator Corcoran, I didn't hear that. But
why don't you repeat that?
Well, I said that a professional licensee who, you know, if he goes out on the weekend and engages in, you know, free speech activity, that he actively supports Saddam Hussein, and we ought to have that kind of regime here, and, you know, that a licensing board could find that, you know, he's treasonous and maybe not fit to hold a professional license in the state of Oregon.
Maybe the psychology board could.
I have represented licensees who have been dragged through contested case proceedings for being rude. Now, those were ultimately dismissed, not until after the licensees each had spent, in one case, $16,000, in the other case, $18,000 to defend themselves. Licensing boards overreact. As I said, I'm concerned that substantially related to fitness is in the eyes of these licensing board members, most of whom, very few of whom, are ever lawyers to understand the nuances of what we call a logical nexus between conduct and the licensed activity.
Senator Starr?
My example was extreme.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Senator Corcoran's
questioning, and I think trying to drive to the point here, and I think that's helpful. The question I have is, does this open it up for, you know, somebody in their youth that you know, commits some minor offense, maybe not even a crime that they, you know, have to pay anything significant for, but a minor offense in their, you know, out of college and early in their career, early in their life, create some, you know, to some kind of something that puts a black mark on some form somewhere in some file, and then 20 years down the road, they're on their way and, you know, living a healthy, great life, and at some point that comes back, and it becomes an opportunity for a licensing board to say, you know, and somehow it gets, you know, the light of day shines on this one opportunity or one kind of black mark on a person's record. Does this language provide an opportunity for a licensing board to come back and say, you know, hey, you know, you lied, or you know, you did something at some point?
Mr. Scott, would you respond to that?
Sure, Chair Girard, Senator Starr. Remember that all licensing board orders are subject to judicial review. They would have to be able to establish to a court satisfaction that the activity that you were talking about, that somebody engaged in, actually was substantially related to their fitness. I think it would be hard for an agency to determine and then to support the fact that something that somebody did when they were 15, for example, and now they're a licensee before the board 30 years later, is, you know, substantially related to their current. I mean, it's in the present tense. It needs to be their fitness to practice. The determination would be made at the time that the licensing board is undertaking that intended action. So I don't think it would support, you know, that kind of a determination. Now, at some point, I mean, there's going to be, you know, at some point you're going to move back in time that it is unsupportable. If it's close in time, like in the Curley circumstance where it was a year before, you know, the person applied for the real estate license and it was directly involved in the kind of activity that the person was going to engage in, I think those factual circumstances would support it. If I'm understanding your hypothetical correctly, I don't think that your hypothetical would support that kind of a determination. I think if some licensing board sometime took that action, that the court on judicial review would overturn it.
If I could comment, I would note that up there in subsection 2 under existing law, when a board uses a conviction to determine whether or not the licensee is fit to practice his or her profession, they must also take into account in a conviction all intervening circumstances, such as in your example that it was done when he was 15 and since then he's been an exemplary citizen and, you know, Boys Club leader and Big Brother. But in this case, where it's merely conduct, not a conviction of any kind, there's no requirement to take into account any intervening circumstances. There is also no time limit on how long ago the conduct was committed. Mr. Schradl is correct that it's worded that is substantially related. But again, there's no, just because this language is written in the present tense does not mean that they cannot do a look back.
Just a quick follow-up. If there were kind of a statute of limitations of some kind in this new language, would that make you feel more comfortable, Ms. Godden?
Well, somewhat, but again, it's that word conduct. If that's anything, that's what worries me. Not conviction, not being charged, not even having had a civil suit found against you, like in perhaps in this case where the person engaged in fraudulent financial activities and could be sued and found to be have been responsible in a civil court. There's not even that requirement. It's conduct. It doesn't have to be illegal or civilly wrong of any kind. And that's what concerns me.
Any other questions of this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. I apologize for coming in so late.
Well, thank you for coming in, Mr. Mayor.
And I apologize for running, so I'm getting out of breath, but thank you for the opportunity.
Could somebody go out in the hallway and tell Tom Gallagher that
Tom's dead? His bill's dead?
Yeah. That's good. Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Chandler, please.
We have some very bad news.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Remember all those bad Irish jokes I've been hearing for years and short jokes and stuff?
Yeah. How's the jury reading?
Not from Gallagher yet. Good
morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Gallagher, and there are no bad Irish jokes.
Does that establish his truthfulness?
You didn't have to go around. This isn't the house.
Mr. Chair, this bill is cursed. We didn't even know that Section 14 was going to raise any issues here. Our sections are the other issues, and we simply corrected a tactical problem in the Legislative Council's office where the business registry that was going to facilitate people's applications through different agencies ran afoul of the fact that when you do it with the Department of Revenue, you can't have an emergency clause. So we went down and dealt with Mr. Chamoff and the AG, and they managed to rewrite the business registry clause in such a way as they could put the emergency clause back in. And other than Section 14, that was the only glitch in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, here for decoration.
That's not saying a lot.
You feel badly.
Can you bring us some bags for another, our heads, please?
Another bad Irish joke.
Is there any member of the panel that feels that Section 14 needs changing or should be reevaluated?
Mr. Chair, it seems overly broad to me. I think of my youth and some of the conduct I had around the Donald Tavern and other things that we used to do when we grew up down there, and today that wouldn't be acceptable. And something you do as a youth or 21 or 22 that might come back to haunt you. Unless it tightened up a little. It seems a little broad to me.
Mr. Chairman, I live just north of Donald, and they're still talking about it at the Donald Tavern.
They talk about Zahner a lot lately. Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, I guess my observation would be that I think the bill's important enough to get through that I wouldn't want it held up because of this issue, so I wouldn't have any problem if Representative Zahner or Senator Starr had a little concern with the broadness of it. If you want to somehow narrow it, I'd be happy to do that. But I think the bill's important. I'd love to get it through.
Representative Green.
I was somewhat persuaded by those arguments, but it seems to me the substantially related clause is safe enough to be tried out, and I suspect it's going to have some work over time in terms of court decisions and a variety of things that define what substantially related is. I mean, I think there is... that notion ought to be handled. And while I do recognize the idea that some of these boards get out of control on occasion, it seems to me this is a good start on a solution to the problem that was raised, and I feel fairly comfortable with it.
Representative Zahner, do you have a particular amendment or change?
Yes, I do, Mr. I'd move the dash.
Well,
he means on that clause.
Because we're talking about 14. Do you have a specific change in mind to amend this bill at this time?
No, I really don't.
I have one. Can I ask Ms. Godwin to come back up? I just have one suggested, perhaps, change. I just want to get a read from her.
And I've done a lot of legislative drafting, and I was legal counsel to a committee for two sessions a while back. So
if we were to eliminate the, on line 8 on page 15, eliminate or impose discipline on a license, I mean, if it was conduct that they used to deny a license as opposed to impose discipline, seems to me that would make a difference.
Yes, in the first example, you wouldn't be denying the person or taking away their existing livelihood. But you could have somebody who's gone to school for years to become an architect, a CPA, and only then will they learn that they're going to be denied the right to be licensed to practice that profession because of some conduct in the past. And if the committee were considering an amendment, I think the amendments in page 14, lines 42 to 45, and then the lines 1 through 6 on page 15 are good amendments. They're good legislative council cleanups. And if there was an amendment, it should be just the deletion of lines 7 through 10 and leave the rest of the cleanup amendments, because those do make sense.
Mr.
in section 14.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Representative?
I'm sorry, I didn't ask you before. You've practiced in this area a lot, and I understand the hypothetical that you raise, and I've been particularly sensitive to free speech hypotheticals, but have there been actual cases where boards have tried to discipline or deny solely on the basis of conduct that was not, for which somebody was not indicted or found guilty or something?
I don't have the background to answer that. I mean, that's a very broad question. You'd have to look through all the agencies. I wouldn't be surprised if it's occurred, but I can't stand here today and tell you it has. But I do know that I am representing two people who were brought up for proceedings because, literally, because they were rude. It's a bizarre case, and I don't want to get too far into it, but it does happen that licensing boards, if they don't like a person, if the person's been an activist in their profession, in either in the medical or architectural or CPA profession, has challenged the board, made themselves, you know, a gadfly and challenged the boards consistently, boards hold tremendous power over people's livelihoods. That's a concern.
Any other questions? Ted, could you come back up? Senator Starr, if we would like to conceptually change this thing, we can do it right now with the wording, I think.
Well, I'd be a little nervous about doing that on the fly right now. I think if, with the chair's indulgence, I don't know that we're going to sign a die anytime soon.
Well, that's real funny, Senator Starr.
We might.
He's best truthful.
Might take some actual time to think and construct a way maybe to narrow this down a little bit.
Ted, do you have any comment in that regard?
Mr. Chair, I really don't. It's a matter of, it's a policy question for you to determine which way you'd like to amend this, if at all.
Okay. We could call the speaker up and ask him when he's signing off.
Attorney General, yeah.
Just Attorney General, I may have it.
Please, Mr. Shadle. Shadle?
He didn't leave quick enough.
Chair Girard, members of the committee, you know, conceptually, we're not intending here to get at, I mean, Ms. Godwin was suggesting that the all intervening circumstances that exist up in the preceding statute makes it look like the conduct that is criminally charged or something needs to be even more substantial and more closely related or anything, and that we're trying to get it broader here. We're not trying to get it broader here, and the intent of the language about is substantially related to the fitness to practice was intended to include that. If it would be helpful to say, you know, the conduct can be considered that is substantially related to the fitness and ability of the applicant to practice, and the board shall consider all intervening circumstances, that would be fine. That's already the intent behind this. Yes, everything. If it occurred 30 years ago, that is a significant criterion factor to consider. If just adding that kind of phraseology in this would be helpful. I mean, we're not intending, like I said, to be broader than that. The is substantially related was intended to get that concept in there.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Could that be handled by amending two above, where it says has been convicted of a crime or has engaged in conduct not undertaken directly? Put that phrase into the line above, which would then include all the intervening circumstances.
I think it'd be easier to bring the other line down.
Chair Girard, Representative Greenley, I think it could be handled, but I think it would need to be worked with Mr. Rettlinger to do that.
If the comfort is to surround that conduct with the sideboards, was that the term Senator used in subsection 2, then that.
Yep.
I mean, if the problem is the worry about conduct, period, being in here, then there's no way to. And the only option is we take it out or we leave it in. If the problem is limiting the circumstances under which conduct needs to be considered, then it seems to me you can do that in two with the so-called sidebars around two, and I'm not sure how
Chair Girard, Representative Greenleaf, if I might. Yeah, that is the intent of the current language, and I think that it already includes all of that. That's the intent. It has the sidebars in it already, and I would suggest to the committee that the bill, that's how the bill would be interpreted by the courts as well. If it would help the bill to move to add things in, that's fine. But the difficulty, as I understand, there are time constraints, and I think it's all, my suggestion is that it's already in there. I would be willing to work to make the bill move to add more specificity about that if necessary.
Mr. Chair. You know, the other thing we could do to satisfy Ms. Godwin's concerns is to have her give us some language that she'd like read into the floor speeches on it to talk about the limitations. Doesn't seem too appealing to you. Okay, I was just trying to get at it another way. I mean, I'm okay with the bill as it is. I'd like, if you need to get it fixed, fix it, but I'm fine sending it forward.
The chair is okay with the bill as written. So we have Senator Starr and Representative Zonner who have concerns, and we certainly want to address those concerns.
Well, I think that they're certainly addressable, but I'd feel less comfortable doing it here on the fly as opposed to getting a little bit of time and work get some language put together with.
Would the committee, is their schedule going to permit, give a couple days to do this and come back before the end of the week?
Sure.
Okay, then we'll ask.
Should we pass the dash eights first now?
We can pass the dash eights if the panel is ready to do that. Representative Zonner?
Yep. Mr. Chair, I move the dash eight amendments into House Bill 3120. B.
The dash B8s?
Yes, the dash B8s.
Yeah. Representative Zonner has moved the dash B8s into House Bill 3120. Any objections? Any discussion? Seeing none, the dash B8s are adopted. The chair will ask Representative Greenlick and Senator Starr to perhaps meet with Ms. Godwin. And Mr. Would you be available to meet with
them? Yes, I would, Chair.
And then we'll try to reschedule a meeting within the next 48 hours to come back and make whatever changes need to be made in this bill. All right?
Thank you. Thank you.
That they're comfortable with.
Great.
We'll adjourn the conference committee on House Bill 3120.